You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. Find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for them in the CUW logo on the sponsor part of our website. Joining me by phone today to talk about our topic, hashtag adulting. You hear it all the time in social media and other places. What does it mean to adult when we make this word adult into a verb? What does it mean? Well, joining us to help us discuss that, Shelley Schwalm, University Ministry Associate, Concordia University, St. Paul. Good morning, Shelley. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you as our guest and looking forward to learning about your work at Concordia University, St. Paul, and working through this topic of adulting. What does it mean to adult? Tell me a little bit about, Shelley, tell me about your work at Concordia University, St. Paul.
Yeah, so I serve as University Ministry Associate. I'm a Director of Christian Education. So essentially, working in our campus ministry, sort of programming with chapel and things like that. But most of what I do is spending time with students and discipleship sorts of programs, equipping students to be able to reach out to other students. But I do a lot of listening, a lot of ministry of hanging out and helping them navigate life and how Jesus fits into all of those things. And yeah, so I spend a lot of time with college students, and it's a blast, and it's challenging, and it's different every day. So, yeah.
What, when you hear this hashtag adulting, when you see it in social media, what is that? Does that relate to your work at all, what you do in serving students, the college students you work with, and making that transition from student life to young adults out in the rest of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. And it gets used widely as people are talking or posting things on social media. Even my own peers, you know, I'm a handful of years outside of college, seeing that being prevalent with recent graduates or fairly recent graduates as well. But with college students, I think it resonates because there's this sense of, I'm trying to be an adult. I often tell students here, college is your time to practice being an adult. This is a safe opportunity for you to try things and mess up without too many consequences at this point, as far as trying things vocationally or whatnot. So I think a big part of that is, especially as I ask some students about this too, of hashtag adulting, let's talk about that. And they really affirmed the fact of, I think more or less it's a defense mechanism, you know, to use this hashtag adulting means I'm trying to do things that I feel like I should do as a grown up, but I don't really know if I'm equipped to do them or know how to do them well or right. So if I kind of make a joke out of it or use this, you know, kind of hook, then it gives me space to maybe not be perfect at it or kind of give a trial run. So I think that's really interesting. I think some people really war against the concept because they're saying, oh, well, these are things you should just do. These are grown-up human things that everybody has to do. So let's not pat ourselves on the back or make a big deal about it. Which I can appreciate, but there's this gap, being able to say that there are lots of young adults that aren't necessarily equipped or know how to do some of those things, and to just say, well, you should know how to do it, isn't really sufficient in this time.
Who do you think young adults turn to when they need advice or when they don't know how to do some of these things that we think as society, we think they should already know how to do? Who do they turn to? Do they turn to friends? Do they turn to their parents? Do they turn to other adults that they respect, mentors or you know, professors? Who do they turn to?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was kind of trying to ask around and get a feel for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really depends. You know, we don't all like to be put in a generational box or whatever. But I will say there, I see a lot of students that are really connected to their parents still. This is a trusted relationship. I know that they have my best interest in mind. It's familiar, all these types of things. So I do see that happen. Peers, yes. But it's kind of funny because I think they understand that their peers are kind of in the same boat as them. so sometimes that's helpful to, like, we're in this together, but also they're not going to be that helpful to me to figure out skills I don't know how to do. And it's pretty fun. That's one of the best parts about my job is feeling like I get access. I have access and permission to be able to walk with students in some of those ways and getting to be present, and they get to know me. And sometimes it's about spiritual things. And everything can tie back to that too. But there, you know, not too long ago, a student came in and said, how do taxes work? Like, I know I need to do this soon, you know, and some of those pieces where there's a beauty in saying, I don't know what I'm doing and I need help. And to see that happen, very earnestly, in some of these students, and I see the relationships they have with some of their professors and that kind of thing. The danger is more and more isolation is happening. And so there might be a student that I'll see off and on, and then they are really struggling, and they'll come to me at the end of the semester and say, hey, just to let you know, I'm transferring. I'm not going to be back. Well, I wish you would have told me, you know, I wish you would have reached out for help. And so I think there's so much tied into fear, fear of failure, fear of trying something, fear of letting people know that I'm struggling and that my life isn't Instagram worthy. And so then I might not reach out and ask for help at all. And that's where we see some of these really scary risk behaviors taking place and that kind of thing. And so it's really tricky where parents might not even know that their kid is failing a class or not functioning well. So I think it's a challenge for higher ed institutions to work on building those relationships so students do have these avenues open that they trust, that if there's something they're struggling with, it's as foolish as being able to navigate the light rail in the Twin Cities. Like, I don't know how to get back to campus, or all the way to taxes, or if I'm struggling with mental health, what do I do? So, yeah, I think that's one of our challenges, is to say, how do we build relationships that these students feel are trustworthy enough to ask those questions?
And if the pattern for establishing those relationships isn't established before they get to college, then that I think that doubles the effort it takes to build those relationships. You know, if they grew up in a family and a culture where having meaningful relationships with adults in addition to your parents,
right?
You know, for example, in a congregation where a young person is not only mentored and shaped by their parents' influence, but also by other adults in their congregation, and they have meaningful relationships with them. I think they learn how to interact, how to communicate, mm-hmm. how to have a conversation with adults, whether they're the same age or not. And if that's not established before they get to college, then I think that makes that chance of isolation all the greater.
Right, right. And statistically, seeing students who have had those relationships with other adults in their congregational experience in their life, they're so much higher likely to stay involved in their faith, to be connected to a church. And so that's really important. Where I think we get to this point, I got to talk to a group of DCEs a few months ago about what do we do with college students and how do we walk with them? And I said, you know, there's a lot that we need to do before we get to this point. It doesn't just start here, but like you said, building on these tools and this experience that they already have. So it can be helpful or not helpful.
What about, we talked about other people that they go to, whether it's friends or parents or mentors.
Mm-hmm.
What about resources that that young people are looking to for advice? Is it magazines, podcasts, TV programs? Where are they getting their views on the world around them? How are those views being shaped and molded? Is it what's most common among young adults today? When it comes to learning about the realities of the world, what's going on in government? You mentioned, you know, just using taxes as an example. Mm-hmm. Certainly going to another person, but do they have other sources that that you think are more common than others?
Yeah, well, and we have to remember too, the end of the millennial generation, and then Gen Z, which is coming right up behind it, and we have a couple of classes worth of Gen Zers already. They've never not had some sort of online resource. So they live in a world of Google. If I have a question, if I'm having an argument or conversation with my friend about a fact or something's true or how to do something, I go to Google. I look it up on YouTube. And I see maybe what my friends on their social media have to say or to share. One student I was talking to about this a couple days ago, she made the point of, yeah, I kind of measure how I'm doing with my life based on my collective social media community. Is this comparable to what they think or where they're at, how they're adulting, how well they're adulting or not adulting? I can feel better about it or worse about it. I think that's really fascinating and really scary in some ways, because how do I know what I'm putting in my heart or in my mind is true through these sources? Do I actually have space to step back and take a break and be able to process and remind myself that my identity in Christ is sure and steady regardless of all of these things? And how do I decide in an era of fake news and people saying this is true and that's not and everyone having a bias? Yeah, what do I do with that? And so it's pretty fascinating. I think there's no lack of information. And so we still have to somehow lean back on relationships, whether or not that's social media driven or, some of the great conversations we've got to have on campus in the last couple of months, just of all the things happening in our world. How do I know what's true? How do I look at what's happening as a believer in Jesus? Because that's not the lens that the internet uses.
Exactly. You brought up a good point that there's no lack of information. You know, the information is readily available when it mm-hmm. comes to social media and the digital world. The challenge is it good? You know, is it accurate information? Is it mm-hmm. is it truth? Is it, you know, does it lead us to truth and beauty and grace? Those things that are good. And without the relationships, you're right. Without those relationships, we're less likely to, well, who knows where we'll end up.
Mm-hmm.
If we're relying solely on social media and the digital world for what shapes our world and our ethos.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And realizing too that the information that I'm reading about a given topic is not just an article. More times than not, it's going to connect back to people. And our life is not just a intellectual exercise, but how does this affect people? And so how do I discuss this, not just as taking in information, but how is this affecting the people that I live with and do life with and share the world that I live in. So I think that's really, but this generation gets that. They get the empathy piece, which is pretty powerful. I don't know if you're familiar with the Passion Conference. It's like a big college-aged kind of mainstream Christianity conference that they have every January. Louis Giglio is kind of a big name in that. And this last month, they had, I think it was like 50,000 people, 50,000 college students coming together for this conference. And they drained the allotted Compassion children that they had at this event. Over 7,000 Compassion children that got sponsored by this group of college students. And so,
what does that say about this generation?
I think it's, you know, we can be so quick to say that they're entitled and self-absorbed. And there's some of that for sure in all of us, right?
Yeah, that's that old Adam in us. Absolutely.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely. But I think there's a lot of hope and a lot of joy that I experience with working with students who they really are motivated and they want to see change happen and they want to see people taken care of and they want to see the hope of Christ and of good things, you know, affecting people in a positive way, and they're creative about that, and they think outside the box, and they're really motivated to love and take care of each other. And so part of this whole conversation is maybe rethinking what our culture says is adulthood a little bit. Maybe it's thinking a little bit more about, I've seen my parents high value on career and making money and all these things, and I want to shift to the other side a little bit and say I'm really pursuing something a lot more meaningful, whatever that means. That maybe markers of adulthood isn't being able to buy a house. To help us rethink some of those things, I think that's going to happen in millennials and in Generation Z, to say let's kind of put our money where our mouth is. So we say we believe these things. Well, we want to see it. I see that in college students.
What do you envision being the new markers of adulthood? What are the challenges and victories that come from moving away and independence, or is moving away even a marker of adulthood anymore?
I think it is. Some students, we've talked about this a little bit with some students, that they really feel compelled to stay close to home and family and be involved and invested, not necessarily living with their parents. Like, some people of my generation have kind of returned to that. I don't think that's the desire for most of the late millennial and early Gen Zers. They actually are pretty compelled to get out and try and do things. But I think there's something different in the meaningfulness. Like, it's really hard for students to say, oh, I'm just going to do something just because I'm supposed to, or think somebody else thinks I should. They want to know why. And so not necessarily that buying a home or getting married or whatever won't be a marker of adulthood, but that it needs to be meaningful. I need to know that this is a meaningful step in my life, and not just something I'm supposed to be doing because people say I should, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
With the students you serve, what do you see as some of the challenges of moving from home to college? I mean, we always hear about that homesickness that some students might encounter when they first move away to college. We're talking about several transitions within a matter of really within a matter of a few years, moving from home to college and then from college, perhaps off to their own career or finding a home of their own. Granted, as you pointed out, some of this generation move back home with their parents after college. How do you have strategies that you offer for those students that are moving from home to college and facing that challenge then? And then that for that next chapter as well.
Yeah, that's huge. And I say this, and I say it sometimes to college students, but not always, because I don't want them to take it the wrong way, because I don't mean it badly. But in a lot of ways, being a college freshman is a lot like kindergarten. This is the first major step out of their home since kindergarten. You know, you think about, they've really been in the same kind of situation for all of their elementary and high school years as far as relationship to home and that kind of thing. So it's a first big step. They grow so much and make big messes and need lots of help. And so we have seen, I've seen even in the few years that I've gotten to work with college students, giving them practical tools to be able to learn how to do things. So some of those financial literacy pieces, or we see our residence life folks and our student life folks that are doing programming for learning some of those practical pieces, those education pieces that aren't necessarily in the classroom. Another big place that I'm seeing this more and more, and we're continuing to talk about it, is coping. Coping is huge. There's tons of fear, especially in Generation Z, about fear of failure, hugely high expectations. And so incessant question askers, questions that you or I might think, really, you're asking that? And so to be able to step back and say, okay, you asking a question means that you're trying to pursue progress, that you want to grow. And so how do I not be frustrated that you don't know something I think you should know and meet you where you're at to help you, not to answer the question for you, but maybe to ask you another question, to give you space to have those adult training wheels, to try some things out. And it's okay to fail. But I think that coping piece, how do I problem solve and give students space to problem solve? How do I, mental health is a huge, huge, huge one, increasing each year with college students. How do I reach out for help? What are the resources that I need to manage my stress to cope with struggles? And we see this predominant voice is saying, oh my goodness, look at these fragile college students that can't cope with the election or can't cope with this, that, or the other thing. Well, this is a post 9/11 generation. They've never lived in a society that doesn't have terrorism as a reality. They've never lived in a society where school shootings haven't been a regular occurrence. Their parents, they watch their parents go through financial distress. And so, yeah, there is a lot of anxiety. It's kind of a cocktail for not being able to cope. And so we do have to just kind of make reality our friend and stop cursing a generational darkness and ask, how do we help? You know, and I think that's a big piece for all of us collectively, especially as church, to say, I'm going to take ownership of my piece and how I can be helpful, and maybe get to know someone in this generation, see how I can be present, or at least acknowledge and reach out to someone, maybe if they're visiting my church, or I know a college student that has gone off to college. When they come back, I can ask some honest questions or things like that.
So, and use this as an opportunity to be helpful rather than judging.
Yeah. Yep. because that totally feeds into this fear that these students have to say, I'm not measuring up. I don't know if I can do anything because I'm frozen, because I'm afraid, because all these people think I can't do it. So it's kind of a cycle there. And we can be frustrated about that. But if we want to help this really lovely, intelligent, empathetic, passionate generation do something incredible, and something incredible for the kingdom that maybe we're not able to do, you know, that God has gifted them for such a time as this to do something different in their generation. I think that's awesome.
My guest today, Shelley Schwalm, University Ministry Associate at Concordia University St. Paul. Shelley, thanks so much for being my guest today and helping us talk about this trend.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Actor Corbin Burnson is best known for his role in L.A. Law. The role Burnson regrets most being unable to play was father of his aborted baby. He and his wife were expecting their second child when the doctor told them the baby had a very serious physical condition. The parents followed his advice and had a late-term abortion. The doctor should have warned them the anguish of abortion would be far worse than allowing the baby to go full term and let God's will be done. Burnson said it was the worst day of his life, but their strong faith carried them through. Please keep them in your prayers. If you know someone struggling after an abortion, contact me through our website at lifeissues.org and we'll get them the free help they need.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, we're Jonathan,
Matthew,
and Nathaniel Clayton.
We listen to KFUO every chance we get.
One of the shows we like is Thy Strong Word,
hosted by Pastor Whedon.
One thing I love about Thy Strong Word is how they are able to tie in what great church fathers have said about the passages.
I like that Thy Strong Word gets through a whole chapter of the Bible each day and shows the things you never even knew were there.
What I like about Thy Strong Word is that Pastor Whedon, the host, is fun and always energetic as he studies the text.
We would encourage you to listen to KFUO every chance you get,
just like we do.
God's Word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship. We romp through the sacred scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that is ours in Jesus Christ.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO, underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. Visit them on the web at lhfmissions.org. KFUO, the messenger of good news. And Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born of the water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit." KFUO, the message is clear.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. You see it on social media all the time, hashtag adulting. What does it mean? What does it mean to be an adult? And why are we turning this into a verb, adulting? Well, we have lined up a number of guests to help us look through this topic and see what it means to be an adult or to adult as a verb. And our guest today, Paige Edgington, Director of Campus Outreach at the Lutheran Student Center at Wichita State University. Paige, welcome to Faith and Family.
Thank you, Andy. Glad to be here.
A pleasure to have you as my guest today, and a fellow director of Christian education serving the church in a unique way, working as director of campus outreach, Lutheran Student Center, Wichita State University. Tell me a little bit about your work there and the Lutheran Student Center.
Yeah, so I work here at the Lutheran Student Center doing campus outreach. So I work with college students in all different settings. My role is to work with students to help them to learn more about Jesus and to grow in their faith, and also help them to do outreach and share their faith with their friends. And so Wichita State is a public university, and so we're in a public school setting. So definitely dealing with those dynamics and learning and teaching them how do we, you know, keep our faith in school with everything that's going on around them and what they're learning and what their teachers are telling them as well. So, yeah.
A daunting task, nonetheless.
Definitely so, but a fun one. I love it.
Well, let's talk about this topic, hashtag adulting. When you see that on social media, what do you think? And I don't know, perhaps you've even used that hashtag before.
Oh, yeah. It kind of makes me laugh because, you know, it's either hashtag adulting or hashtag adulting is hard. It really, you know, it's something we kind of joke about and
right.
say kind of candidly, but, you know, it is hard. The transition to becoming an adult is kind of it's a hard transition sometimes, and it's different for everybody. So,
how does social media shape your world? How is it a part of your multiple vocations?
Well, I use it a lot for work, sometimes to my liking, and sometimes not. And so I'm on social media for work and then also personal, and just figuring out how to balance that is also important. And sometimes it's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse. You know, we have the blessing in the sense that we're able to share our faith in ways through social media and access to the world that we didn't have before, especially when I was a child growing up. But sometimes it's constantly there and you just need to shut it off and check out a little bit from it and get away. So. Mm-hmm. In ways it's good, in ways it's not so good.
Well, you mentioned, your childhood. Let's go back to childhood and teen years as well. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up and what led up to you considering this vocation, this service as a director of Christian education.
Yeah, so I am actually originally from Wichita, so I'm back here serving in my hometown, which is not very common in the DCE world. I grew up Lutheran, went to a middle-sized Lutheran church, the mother church here in our town, and we had a very active youth group, a very active children's ministry, and I was very active growing up. I'm very thankful that to my mom it was important for us to go to church and be raised in the church like she was, and that my dad saw that as important as well and always made sure that we got there. Loved my church years growing up, had the typical youth group experience, lock-ins and Bible studies and fun outings and serious times, and definitely some good biblical mentors that really had a vital role in my becoming a church worker. Early on, I had someone very close to me encourage me that I should go look into DCE ministry and that she thought that it would be a great fit for me, and it took me a little while to come around to that. I ended up going to Wichita State, here where I'm actually serving for 2 years before I actually did go off to Concordia to be in ministry. So I had kind of that, I had both settings of going to a public college and then a private Christian college as well, two kind of different experiences as well. So, yeah.
Same here. I went to a public college and then a Concordia University as well, and became a DCE. So we have that in common, and I value the experience that I had at both. I learned about these various world views. So I certainly value that. Let's go back to high school. You mentioned your parents. It was important to them that you got to church, that the Word of God was an important part of your life. What did you think about that at the time?
I was thankful for it because, you know, looking back at times, there were times I probably did not want to get up and go, and we were going to church, so I went. And but I loved my youth group experience, and I loved just being able to have that experience in that community. Church was a place where I felt safe and a place where I really felt like I belonged. And I think for me, that is really a reason why I'm thankful that my parents got me there, you know, and they got me into the type of situation where I would have that type of community and people that would help form my faith as well.
So what about the making that transition to your life as an adult, albeit a young adult, you know, that you mentioned that your parents, it was very key in that it was important to them that you made it to church. So how did you make that transition then to finding a new church? You mentioned you went to, you know, a public university. How did you make that transition? What things were challenging about finding a congregation and connecting with other Christians in your college experience?
Well, it was going to my public university. I did have a church that I already belonged to because the university I went to was in my hometown, though I had just transferred churches. So in a sense, I had found a new church. So I had that kind of experience and became a part of a new community. But it was a lot different. My first year of college, I lived at home. And so I really did well of making it to church. And then my second year of college, I lived in my sorority house. And so making it to church was still a priority to me, but it was definitely a lot harder once you're living on your own. You don't have someone helping you get out of bed and say, okay, Paige, time to go to church, and getting you there. It's definitely something that becomes more self-directed and more of my own priority rather than my parents' priority.
Would it have been easy to let go of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there were times when I did. There were times when it was easy to sleep in or not go to church or to, not have. But what helped me through that, I think, in my early years at Wichita State was I had people at my church that were looking for me. I think it was harder when I actually transferred to Concordia. And though it was a Christian university, it was really hard for me to find a church at that school. And it took me like a year. And there were days when it was really easy for me not to go because there weren't people there that were missing me or that were looking for me or that were, you know, when I came the next week said, Paige, we missed you last week. So it was a lot easier then to not go to church after I transferred from my hometown.
I know for me, when I went to Concordia University and there was a congregation that met there on campus on Sundays, similar experience. And I think for me, what really stood out was there wasn't typically that sound of babies crying on Sunday morning because it was mostly college students, mostly in that, the traditional college student age that attended there. There were a few families with children that attended, but it wasn't that often that you'd hear a baby crying or, you know, a child that's distracted by something and trying to get mom and daddy's attention. It was primarily college students. It was almost a homogenous group. In that sense. And yeah, they're college students. So people are, you know, gone on a frequent basis. You're not there every Sunday. So you don't have as many people looking out and noticing that you're gone. I could see how that, what you're saying, that really makes sense. That when someone's not there to notice that you're gone, it makes a difference.
Absolutely. And even just trying a new church and a new worship style, I know when I tried new churches, I was first kind of exposed to contemporary worship, and I was raised in a very traditional church, and that was different for me at first and uncomfortable, and I've grown to love it and appreciate it, but that was hard, not having that familiarity as well of, what you're used to, and not just in people, but in just the atmosphere and what goes on every week. It's just a whole new kind of thing to dive into.
Tell me about other aspects of making that transition to adulting, to adult life that were challenging. You mentioned, you know, making that transition to college and your Sunday worship was challenging because didn't have those, in a sense, older mentors, those older members of the congregation, others who were expecting you there. What about other aspects of transitioning to adult life, a new job, and perhaps even a new circle of friends?
Yeah, for sure. I think all of those apply, getting new jobs or even, just making decisions or figuring out, you know, what am I going to eat for dinner? And when am I going to do my laundry and that type of thing? You're kind of out on your own for the very first time, and everyone's experience is different, but you have to find new ways to navigate through that. And choosing friends and finding friends to get involved with and to form that community with is really important and crucial. because I think the friends that you choose will help to shape your college experience as well and the decisions that you make.
What about living space? Now, you mentioned your first year of college, you lived at home, but what prompted you to make that decision to move either to campus or to move into an apartment or a place on your own?
Well, I think wanting to just kind of be on my own and be around different people as well and have a new kind of experience was part of that reason why I made that transition. Some of it was like when I moved to Concordia, I had to. You know, you go on campus and you're kind of forced to live in the dorm. And so some of that was by choice and some was by kind of being forced to or by the nature of the college experience. But that's a big adjustment as well to just, you know, figuring out where you're going to live and are you going to have a roommate and are you going to get along with your roommate? How is that going to go?
Yeah, tell me about that.
It's hard, especially when you're not used to having a roommate and learning how to work well together or respect each other or even, you know, when you are always there together and enjoy each other's presence, but also have that alone time, especially when you're used to having alone time is important as well. And figuring out how do you work well together or how, you know, what are proper etiquette things that you do with your roommates and discovering boundaries. It's a little different to have a roommate than have, you know, a brother that you live with.
So tell me about how you think that shaped, you know, that college experience, how that shaped your and prepared you for life outside of college, beyond college, some might say life in the real world.
I think it was a good transition. You know, you learn a lot of things in college. You may not understand what kind of lessons you're learning in your classes, but really, or how this might apply to what I'm going to be doing in the real world. But in college, you learn time management. You learn priorities. You learn decision-making and things like that, things that do prepare you for the real world. So I think that my experience in college helped me to figure out, you know, how to manage my time well, how to prioritize my time well, how to accomplish a task, how to work well in a team, those types of things.
Were there times when making that transition from college life to adulting that you found that it was difficult or perhaps even stuck in making a transition?
Yeah, because you kind of feel in between. You feel in the middle. It's kind of an awkward stage, especially like when you live on your own for a little bit, but then you go home on the weekends. Or, you know, you go home for the summer and you have that sense of independence, and then you kind of have to adjust all over again when you go home to live with your parents. It's kind of this awkward phase of experiencing that time on your own, as well as then figuring out how to deal with the transitions of, you know, going. Sometimes you feel like you go a little bit backwards, you know, when you go home for the summer. At least that was my experience.
So what's it like now when you go home to visit family?
What's it like now?
Yeah.
a lot different. I mean, I'm married too, and we just moved back to our hometown. We've been back about 2 years, and my husband and I had about 5 years where we traveled around doing schooling and internships in my first call. And so now living back in our hometown with our parents, both being married and also being here in the same town and having a whole different relationship, you know, with our together as spouses and then with our family is different. And you create, I think, a new sense of relationship with your family and boundaries and certain types of circumstances like that. The relationship kind of changes and transitions, which can be different and kind of complicated as well as figuring out, you know, how is my relationship with my parent different when I get married or when I move out on my own.
How did your college experience prepare you for married life?
Oh, wow.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is you mentioned having a roommate in college and not really having that experience before. Did that make a difference? Do you think that prepared you in any way for married life?
Oh, for sure. I think even just learning, how to live with someone else, that definitely did. I got married in the middle, kind of towards the end of college as well. So I was one of those that was married while I was going to college. And so that was a fun transition. And thing to navigate through as well, you know, that I was married but also finishing my school. Yeah. So I think it definitely having a roommate helped prepare me for that and helped prepare me with living with another person. But you can't treat your spouse just like a roommate, though. There's so much more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What, going back to transitioning to adulthood out of college life, were there people that you went to when you had questions or challenges or difficulty, or when you felt stuck? Who were the people that you'd go to? Who were the friends that you sought out in those transitions?
I think the friends that I sought out were probably the ones that knew me best. My friends that I've been friends with for the longest time, friends that knew me and my personality, also my parents, my mom especially. I talked through a lot of that with her. And my youth leader from growing up was someone that I sought out for advice as well.
What do you take all that you've learned, and how do you use that, your own experience, in your work with students as you serve with the Lutheran Student Center at Wichita State?
I think, especially because it feels so fresh, it wasn't that long ago that I was in college. It's easy because I see, you know, the things that my students are going through and experiences that they're having, and I'm like, oh yeah, I can remember exactly what that was like, or remember the decisions I made that maybe weren't the best ones, or the mistakes I made that weren't, you know, the greatest and I kind of had to pay for. But in that sense, it makes me have a little bit of grace for them and gives me the ability to extend that grace, but also to help them walk through what they're going through and help them to make good decisions and also just be here. You know, it's good for them to know that they have someone that they can come and talk through things or help make decisions with, or even just vent, or, you know, someone that can just understand what it is that they're going through.
When you have decisions to make or find yourself in a challenging situation, as an adult, when did you choose to involve your parents in those decisions? And when would you not choose? And how do you recommend that, you know, when you're interacting with students who are making those transitions, when are there times that you recommend that they involve their parents in those decisions, and or perhaps not?
I think if they would be comfortable sharing it with their parents, that's always a good time. And they also know their relationship with their parents. You know, there's many times I think of when I went to my mom and I sought her out for advice and I didn't like what she had to say. And, you know, but later on I'm like, oh, okay, she had a good point there. I wish I would have listened. And there's a balance whenever you are transitioning into adulthood that maybe you want that independence from your parents. And so maybe going to them is not always the best if you know that you won't be able to listen to them. But when you feel like it's something you're comfortable talking to them about and you feel like you would be able to heed their advice or listen to their advice, that would be a good time to go to them. But also that's the beauty in being an adult, is we do get to make our own decisions, but we also have our own consequences and have to answer to those consequences at times as well.
What about involving or going to your pastor when you have questions or decisions? Is it different as, you know, from when you were in high school? Are there different aspects to it when you go now as an adult versus when you were a youth or even a child?
Yeah, I think sometimes it is, because I think your relationship with your pastor changes as well. You might have a new pastor, or it could be the same pastor that, you know, watched you grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But your pastor is someone that's there for you, that is there as someone too that would pray with you or just walk with you through a difficult time. And so hopefully you have a relationship with your pastor or able to find a pastor that you would be comfortable going to. But definitely using them as a resource, because that's what they're there for, to guide you and walk with you through situations as well.
So when you are serving these students at Wichita State, Lutheran Student Center there, do they ever talk about the hashtag adulting trend that we see on social media? Does that ever come up in conversation? What do they think about that when they see hashtag adulting?
I think, you know, I don't know if I've heard that thing come, that term come up.
They're not before, there yet, but, right?
You know, they're not there. It's kind of that, you know, they are adults in one sense, but are they really viewing themselves as adults? I definitely view them as adults. And do they realize that they are adults making, you know, decisions that will, you know, stick with them through their lifetime as being adults? So it's not something that I think is 100% phased into their mindset. I think right now, sometimes they're just in survival mode. We got to make it through, you know, this day or this test or this event. And but they're experiencing adult things, which is kind of the confusing thing.
Yeah, sometimes in college, like you said, we're in survival mode as opposed to thriving. And so sometimes our approach to things is, well, just getting it done is good enough.
Right.
As opposed to, how can I do this in the best way? What is going to be the most helpful way? I remember those days.
Yeah. And everyone's experience is different. You know, they want to achieve and succeed and perform well in school. And, you know, what is the best way that I can do that and do my work well is a good question to be asking.
So when talking with perhaps an older adult, maybe a mentor, and this topic of hashtag adulting comes up, how do you explain it to someone who's not in the social media world or not familiar with hashtags?
I think a good way is to ask them, like, if they remember what it was like when they became an adult. You know, when did you feel like you were really an adult, or what was the experience that you had to go through to get you there? And remembering how hard it is, because the transition is hard, and everyone's is different. You know, and there's, you know, what does really make you an adult? Is it the experiences that you go through or the achievements that you make? But we all have that transition at some point. And for older adults, sometimes it's a little further removed, you know, to think back of what your college experience was like or your young adult experience was like. But we can all relate in some way.
That's a good question. When was that for you? When did you feel like you were an adult?
Right.
Well, I'm asking you, when was that for you, Paige? When was that time? That's a great question. I wish I would have written it down. When was that for you that you felt like, oh, now I'm an adult?
I was actually having the same conversation with another student about a week ago. And so I have to give him credit for it, because we were having that conversation of, when did I know I was an adult? And for me, I said, you know, it was when I moved out of home and I was on my own, that I felt like I was an adult. Kind of that kind of rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm on my own, I'm making my own decisions, I'm paying my own bills, that type of thing. But that's just one way to look at it. It could be your experiences. It could be, you know, he kind of turned it an interesting way and said, I knew I was an adult when I knew who I depended on, and that was God. And it was a whole maturity conversation as well. You know, how do you know when you're mature?
That's a good question. I don't know if I could answer that.
I don't know if I could either.
I don't know if I've reached that point. I think so.
Yeah.
Perhaps sometimes I think it's associated with filing taxes.
Oh, man. Especially for church workers. That's hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hashtag adulting. I hope that that your work in serving these young adults at Wichita State Lutheran Center at Wichita State is a blessing to you and to those that you serve. And certainly, I know it will be, because I hear your perspective, and it all comes back to the place of the Word of God in our lives. And I see that's what you're relying on, and very grateful that you're there to serve those students and share with them what being an adult is all about. And thanks for giving us a good perspective on hashtag adulting today. Paige Edgington, Director of Campus Outreach, Lutheran Student Center at Wichita State. Thanks so much for being my guest today, Paige.
Thank you, Andy.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.